Okay, dear Dhamma friends, we can start the session now. First of all, we'll pay homage to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Ekayano ayam bhikkave maggo sattanam visuddhiya. ශෝක පරිද්දවානං සමතික්කමාය දුක්ඛ දෝමනස්සානං අත්ථගමාය ඥායස්ස අධිගමාය නිබ්බානස්ස සච්චිකිරියාය යදිදං චත්තාරෝ සතිපට්ඨානාති. Dear Dhamma friends, we are actually in the Sutta teaching session. So in this session actually we are trying to discuss various suttas and we are trying to select most of them relevant to our practice, so that we can get some insight, we can get some guidelines from these suttas. So Buddha actually mentioned that we need to do sutta anugahita. Time to time we need to listen to Dhamma, we need to sort of read a book. So likewise we need to get some understanding about the Buddha's teaching, so that we are confident that we are not going in a wrong direction, rather we are in the correct track. Now, as a result, we have discussed several suttas already. Sabbasava Sutta we discussed, which is dealing with various stains. And then we discussed Kayagata Sati Sutta, which is completely dealing with the body-based meditation. And now we are discussing Satipatthana Sutta, that is one of the very important and very popular sutta, especially among the meditating crowd. Now, in Satipatthana Sutta, Buddha basically elaborate on how to establish mindfulness and how to develop further once after establishing mindfulness, and then how to continue one's practice as a kind of a path. Now, if we consider Satipatthana, so the basic term means that we have to establish mindfulness. We have to, in a way, support mindfulness. Now, there are Anupassana. The term Anupassana means again and again you have to do it. It is not that just once that you are establishing mindfulness, but you have to do it again and again. Now, here, actually, there are four types of anupassana: kaya anupassana, vedana anupassana, citta anupassana, dhamma anupassana. In the kaya anupassana section, primarily we are trying to observe our body. In vedana anupassana, we are mostly paying our attention to various types of feelings. And in citta anupassana, observing the mind. And then in the dhamma anupassana, we are observing various phenomena, mostly related to the mind. Now, when it comes to the practice, Buddha say one has to maintain certain qualities while engaging this practice. First of all, we have to be mindful, satima. So that would be one of the basic instruction, how one can establish mindfulness in the present moment. As we all know, typically our mind gets distracted towards the past and the future. Now, in order to practice Satipatthana, or one theme, or one important aspect of practicing Satipatthana is to bring our attention to the present moment. It does not mean that we have to completely forget about the past and be ignorant about the future. We can reflect about the past and future also while being mindful, while being in the present. But we haven't lost the present. Now, Satima, the term Satima therefore emphasizes this mindfulness, that you can or you have to establish mindfulness in the present moment, so that you are not being carried away by various incidents happened in the past and not daydreaming about the future. Suppose you are able to establish mindfulness, and then Buddha say you got to clearly know the present moment. You should clearly know the present moment phenomena, currently arising phenomena. You should know, clearly know, Sampajano. And once that is there, you need to continue this for a long time. It is not a one day practice or one week practice that it has to become a kind of a way of life. So it is not that you are forcefully doing it, even though it appear like little forceful or little kind of big effort at the beginning, but slowly as you are familiar with it, so this practice become more close to you, more and more relevant to you, and you can easily continue with it without much effort. But anyway, at the beginning you need a lot of effort because our mind is fairly polluted and conditioned with various defilements, especially by various hindrances. So that in order to overcome those hindrances, you need a fair amount of energy. Even when the path is very difficult, you need to continue it. So that requires a fair amount of endurance, perseverance, and that related energy. And again, you need to continue it for a long time. There are also kind of energy is required to continue. Otherwise, you may practice for a month or two, and then you might forget it, even you leave it aside. But in order to continue a practice as a common ordinary activity, it also requires a fair amount of energy. On the other hand, when you are really engaged in the practice, you need to maintain kind of a balance of energy. If you exert too much energy while you are practicing, then that itself can become a hindrance to the further growth of various other qualities like concentration. So this concentration and energy has to be properly balanced. So likewise, this energy is also another energy or effort is one of another important factor that Buddha says that we need to properly maintain. That is one essential quality we need to maintain throughout the practice. And then Buddha says, Vinaya loke abhijja domanassa. So we need to maintain some sort of equanimous mind if we are to have an unbiased observation. Now, if our attention is fairly drawn to various other beautiful things, or we are being distracted to various other blissful things, then we are not maintaining that balance. Similarly, if we are being sort of going through some sorrow, kind of a despair while doing the practice, so that is also indicate we are not maintaining the proper balance. So this proper balance, maintaining that middle mind, equanimous mind, one of another important aspect. Now, if one is able to maintain such background, then one can further improve one's attention, one's mindfulness, and in turn it causes to improve clear comprehension. And that is actually a path to improved wisdom, we can say. Now we are going through one after the other of the first section. Now we are in the Kayanupassana section, that again and again we have to look at the body. So we can learn about the body through books and various other means, but here we have to use our own focused attention in order to observe the body. So that is the key difference in typical learning and this Satipatthana practice. In the Satipatthana practice, the emphasis is given to this direct touch, this direct observation. It is not that we are asking from someone or we are learning from external source. Rather, we are keeping our attention, our own focused attention to various bodily processes so that we can learn from them, and we are sort of observing their behavior. So more and more one observes that behavior, there are certain other qualities going to develop within our mind. It is not really that this, not only that we are in a way trying to get a better perspective about the body, but also certain other very important qualities are developed in the mind. Sometimes it is very difficult to understand how such very simple practices lead into such profound understanding. But that is the way where Buddha's teaching is taking us. These simple practices have the potential to develop or to give us some more deep understanding, profound understanding about ourselves, this whole society, and the whole environment at large. Now, if we consider Anapanasati, so Buddha starts with the how one can develop mindfulness using breathing. There you are able to establish mindfulness on in-breath, then on out-breath. Again on in-breath, again on out-breath. So that is the first step. Sato vasa sati, sato passa sati. So once you are successful in that, then Buddha does not stop us there. Rather, he asks us to further penetrate this breath, further examine this breath, so that you are able to recognize various subtle aspects of the breath. Say, whether it is long, whether it is short, whether it is warm or whether it is cool, from which nostril it is going in, from which nostril it is going out. So likewise, these subtle aspects are only visible when our mind is fairly or sharply mindful. And that is something that we have to purposely do at the beginning, otherwise our mind simply stay on the surface. But rather we have to pay a kind of a curious mind so that we can examine the breath very closely. Now, when it comes to Iriyapata, that is what we are basically on daily basis we are using, either sitting, standing, walking, lying down. So these are the main postures, and while we are using those postures, we can be mindful. And Buddha extend this to various other sub postures as well, and even to various sub activities. In the Sampajanyapabba, Buddha ask us to be mindful on various daily activities as well. Say, for example, while eating, one can be mindful. While walking, one can be mindful. While standing, one can be mindful. Say, while wearing your clothes, you can be mindful. When you are stretching your limbs, you can be mindful. Likewise, all the daily activities, if we connect with mindfulness, then we can say, okay, from the very morning to the night, so I am trying to maintain some unbroken mindfulness. At the beginning, it may constantly get break, doesn't matter, but we have some understanding, okay, I am having some sort of a desire to establish mindfulness as much as possible. Suppose you are driving a vehicle. So at that time, you can be mindful. You are talking with another person. You can be again mindful. You are listening to someone. Again, one can be mindful. So likewise, it is not that this mindfulness is limited only at the sitting session or walking session. Rather, you can spread this mindfulness to all the daily ordinary activities. That is how we have to practically enhance this mindfulness, how to sort of internalize this mindfulness. Now, as you are more and more aware of the body, then not only breathing, but even say rising and falling of the abdomen, heartbeat, so likewise, many other subtle processes become evident. Now, such another aspect is called Dhatu Manasikara. That is what we are discussing, we are going to discuss today. You all know that according to the Buddha's teaching, so one can categorize whole physical world into four types of elements. Earth element, Patavi Dhatu, represents the most solid aspect. And water element, Apo Dhatu, represents the liquid aspect. And then Tejo Dhatu, heat element, represents the heat aspect or temperature in a way. On the other hand, the air element, Vayo Dhatu, represents the movements, the whole air types one can represent. So these are the four ways that, according to the Buddha's teaching, how this whole physical world is categorized. Now, we can say it is quite similar to the modern science, where today we have various materials recognized and different names are given. But here, in a way, kind of a simplified approach is given. It is not that we are trying to have a table and understand all these different types of atoms, materials. Rather, we are trying to understand the world in a different perspective. Typically, we are lost in various concepts, conventional ideas. As a result, we actually lost the fundamentals. We have built some sort of a conceptual world on top of certain fundamentals. Ultimately, we get lost on that conceptual world, forgetting the fundamentals. So in this practice, actually, it helps us to go back to these fundamentals so that we really know what is really available. It is not that mind-made or man-made stuff, rather what is really available. So this Dhatu Manasikara actually helps us to touch that deep or touch that depth, the very basics. Now, in order to recognize these elements, we need to know their characteristics. I can remember Most Venerable Mātara Jñānārāma Mahāthero is telling in one of his books, he very beautifully mentioned that the yogi, the practitioner, should know the language of the elements. It is not that these elements are sort of talking in English or Sinhala or any other language, but rather they show their presence using their characteristics. So the earth element typically has six characteristics. Through that we can recognize them: hardness, softness, heaviness, lightness, roughness, smoothness are the six characteristics typically shown by earth element. So whenever you recognize hardness, there you can understand I am recognizing the presence of earth element. Whenever you understand heaviness, you can understand I am at the moment aware of earth element. Whenever you recognize grossness or roughness, there again you can understand I am recognizing earth element. Similarly, when you are aware of softness, that is also an indication of earth element. When you are recognizing lightness, that again represents earth element. When you are recognizing say smoothness, that also represents earth element. So likewise, there is a heavy aspect and the light aspect of earth element. And on the other hand, if we consider water element, it has primarily two characteristics: the watery or the flowing aspect. You know that if you consider water, it has the nature to flow from higher height to a lower height, it constantly flows. So this flowing behavior is one key feature, key characteristics of water element. Similarly, it has the ability to cohesive. Say, suppose there are kind of dust particles available. If you put some water, then you can sort of bind it to as a one lump. So therefore, this cohesion is one important aspect of water element. So because of that cohesive aspect, that all these other elements are put together and appear like one unit. If there is no water element, everything falls apart and nothing is appear like solid. So this solid nature is only possible because of this cohesive nature, cohesive characteristics of the water element. So therefore, water element has two primary characteristics, that is the flowing and the cohesion. And then when it comes to say air element has the nature to move. Now you know that your hands can be moved, your legs can be moved, you can jump, you can walk, you can run. So all these movements are possible because of the air element. And again, air element helps us to maintain our posture. Suppose you are standing, so the various pressure being applied towards our body, so when that pressure is well balanced, so then we can maintain standing posture. So likewise, this maintenance of the posture, maintenance of this kind of shape is possible because of air element. So those are the two aspects of air elements, that is the movement, vibration, and this maintenance of the shape, you can say. And then the heat element also has two aspects, that is the heat or the hot and cold. Whenever heat element is more available, that we can say it is hot, and when it is less available, we can say it is cold. So I mean, if you can consider this, you will understand that whole physical world actually can be categorized according to these four elements. irrespective of the complexity, everything can be included to this model. So this is kind of a model, we can say, where we can analyze the whole physical world, and we don't need to get lost in so many names that typically nowadays we have attributed. Now, on top of these fundamentals, that we have built so many other conceptual complicated parameters. We have given so many names, so many other models, so many other, say, colors and etc. Just on top of these four elements, four primary elements. Now, how to recognize them during the meditation? So that is also not that difficult. Say, for example, you are in walking meditation. At the beginning, you consider that I am walking. So that is how we may be all starting. So you are selecting a walking path and you are simply walking. And now you are trying to keep attention on your foot. As it lifting up, you are paying attention. As you are placing it, you are paying attention. When you are keeping it on the floor, you feel various hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness, so you can recognize. Now slowly, actually we need to refine our attention so that we can recognize these element characteristics. At the beginning it is difficult because our mind starts to distract, because walking is a kind of a very ordinary, simple activity, boring activity. So mind does not find it interesting. So we need to mindfully again and again pay our attention to this walking so that we can left behind the past and the future and well establish in the present moment. Then suppose you are able to walk from this end to the other end without breaking attention. Now you know you are keeping left leg, you know you are keeping right leg, so kind of unbroken attention being maintained during the whole process. As you are continuing your practice, you can leave aside all this noting. Rather, you can go to some silent observation, very careful attention being drawn to this whole process. As a result, what happens is, these element characteristics slowly become evident. You may start with the more gross aspects like hardness of the floor. That is quite evident, easy to understand. And you are able to now understand hardness while walking. Without stopping there, you can recognize, you can try to recognize various other subtle element characteristics as well. Not only hardness, you may start with hardness. Now it paves the way to understand, okay, the roughness, maybe softness, maybe smoothness. When you are lifting your leg, you probably might feel the heaviness, and you can probably understand how the weight being transferred from one leg to the other leg. So that is, the heaviness is being sort of changed, and sometimes you may feel lightness, and certain parts of the walking path may be hot, so you may recognize this, that feature, and certain parts may be cool, you can recognize that. Likewise, slowly, as you pay attention to this whole walking process, you can more and more recognize these element characteristics. Now, later on, even you can bring this attention to sitting session. Probably you may start with paying attention to postures. Now I am sitting. My head is straight. Say neck is straight. My upper half of the body is straight. Legs are bent. So likewise, you are slowly bringing your attention to the posture. Now, as you move forward, you are able to refine your mindfulness so that you can even understand, say, rising and falling. At the beginning, it's in a way a little conceptual. We have given a name as rising. We have given a name as falling. So our tummy is rising, our tummy is falling. So that is how we perceive at the beginning. But later, as we move forward, we don't need this noting. We can simply silently observe this whole process. So it gently starts, it goes to some threshold, and then it completely disappears. After a little gap, then the falling cycle starts. and then it reaches some well or good awareness, and then ultimately it also disappears. And after a little gap, the next beginning of the rising starts. Now, likewise, this happens like a cyclic nature, and you are able to recognize all these subtle aspects. Now, this single rising may probably appear like series of risings. The single falling might be able to recognize as series of fallings. Say rising consisted of 10 risings. Say falling consists of 10 fallings. Now you have minute 10 risings, minute 10 fallings. So likewise, if you are able to recognize in that manner, you may understand it is they are not really sort of your tummy rising or tummy falling, rather they are very subtle movements. Now you can recognize the movements of this whole experience. So this whole experience has interpreted or sort of perceived with very fundamental or basic experience. It has reduced to a very basic experience, that is a series of movements. As you improve, probably now you can understand various vibrations available throughout the body. And maybe certain parts, suppose you are keeping your arms together on top of the other, probably you can feel some warmth in between. So there you are recognizing the heat element. And now the weight of the upper hand can be felt on the lower hand. There you are again recognizing the heaviness. That is one aspect of earth element. And say you are paying attention to heartbeat, heart vibration. That is the movement, and that is a aspect of the air element. Say you are paying attention to breathing. Instead of you are saying, I am inhaling, I am exhaling, now you can pay attention to the movement of the air. There you can recognize the air element. Suppose you are able to recognize that in-breath is cooler, out-breath is warmer. There you are recognizing the heat element. So likewise, once your attention is refined, you are able to recognize all these element characteristics. More and more you recognize these element characteristics, so what else is available? So if you consider this whole physical body, it is nothing but elements. So this is a kind of a deeper insight arising in the mind. So more and more you recognize these element characteristics, you will start to understand there is nothing else but elements. And you can now apply that same knowledge to outside as well. Now in the outside, say another person, if you consider his or her body, that is also nothing but four elements. Similarly, if you consider all other physical world, that is also nothing but four elements. So this is actually a deep insight where you are able to understand and you are able to uncover those four elements. So we have removed the wrapper of conventions, concepts, and we are able to touch the core of the physical aspects, that is nothing but four elements. So this actually gives us sort of an insight, and now we are a little dispassionate about this whole process. Now Buddha gives us a very beautiful simile in this section, in this Satipatthana Sutta, what you call Dhatu Manasikara. So where Buddha says that there's a butcher who kills cows. While he's killing a cow, he has the perception that I am killing a cow. Now he divide the whole corpse into carcass into small pieces, and now he take it to whatever selling place, and now people are coming and asking flesh, meat, and he is now selling meat. Now he has completely lost the perception of a cow. Now he only has the perception of meat. So Buddha says similarly, the yogi at the beginning has the perception of a being, a person. But later, as we move forward, that perception going to diluted, going to get diluted, and ultimately we also have the perception it is nothing but elements. So this is the kind of a radical change happens in the Dhatu Manasikara practice, element meditation. So this is how our wrong perception about a being, about a person, about an individual is going to change to more realistic understanding that this is nothing but elements. It's a kind of a manifestation of elements. Now, more one is able to understand it, more kind of a dispassion arises about this body. You know, typically we give a lot of value to this body and we consider our body is much important, our body is more beautiful, our body is much handsome when compared with someone else's body. So we may get even conceited because of this kind of an attitude. But when we are looking at this body as merely elements, so such kind of a comparison is becoming very difficult and very much like foolish. Because here also elements and there are also elements. And elements really don't know where they are residing. So it is we that we given various names and various boundaries. But elements don't really know where they exist. Elements don't know whether they are in a female body or male body. Whether they are in a Sinhalese body or English body. Whether they are in a Buddhist body or Muslim's body. They are merely elements. Now we can understand how in a way that we unnecessarily get lost in these conventions. We are even hitting each other, quarreling each other, killing each other, just because that we forgotten these fundamental realities. Rather, we conceptualize the whole thing and introduce so many conventions, names, and ultimately we are being lost in these conventions. We forgot that basics. We forgot the fundamentals and we are struggling in mind-made or man-made conventions. And we are killing each other just to protect those man-made conventions. So this is something that we need to think about. And this meditation actually helps us to come back to the bottom, come back to the ground. Well established on the fundamentals. Now, once you are well established in this elements meditation, now there is nothing but elements. In this body also elements, in outside bodies also elements, all other physical objects available throughout the physical world is also nothing but elements. Now you are losing the interest, you are losing the conceit, so you are becoming fairly a light-minded person. And this is one aspect. And on the other hand, now you can say, now you can pay attention to the behavior of the elements. These elements are not real particles, but we can say they are sort of energies. Because more you pay attention, you will understand it's a kind of activity is going on. Earth element is not a particle, but it's a kind of an activity. It is not a noun, it's a verb. So we typically consider everything using nouns. But earth element, water element, air element, heat element, they are not really nouns, but they are verbs, we can say. So they are not particles, but they are waves or energies. Now if you consider earth element, say for example, hardness has a beginning and quickly disappears. Softness also quickly begins and then disappears. Heaviness quickly begins and then disappears. Lightness quickly begins and then disappears. Roughness quickly begins and then disappears. Softness quickly begins and then disappears. Movement, of course, you can easily understand. Movement has a beginning and then an end. Heat also, say the temperature, heat, also has a beginning and then end. Vibration obviously are arising and passing away. So likewise, if you consider the real nature of all these elements, they have their common characteristics. They all have the nature to come and go. They all have nature to arise and pass away. So if one is paying attention very closely to this behavior, so another deep understanding about this whole physical world is possible. Typically, our attention is not penetrative, rather it simply stay in the surface. But rather this practice, when we are clearly knowing, we will understand these elements are not sort of stable, but they are extremely vulnerable and extremely fragile. They come and go, they come and go very quick. And more you see that, you will understand how transient they are, how impermanent they are. Now this is the aspect of the second, say, part of this Satipatthana, where first of all you establish mindfulness on elements, you recognize clearly, distinctly these element characteristics, and more you understand it, more you understand that they have some common nature. They have the nature to arise and pass away. They are very impermanent, they are quite transient, and constantly they are subjected to this arising and passing away. So how can you expect lasting happiness from such kind of a behavior? When constantly things are changing, can you expect some lasting or permanent happiness? It is impossible, because you never know when they are going to be otherwise, going to be something else. So there you will understand it is impossible to be satisfied using this physical world. In one moment it may give satisfaction because of inevitable change. It may change otherwise, it may change to a different state. There it may be producing some kind of even a suffering. So there you may understand the suffering nature, unsatisfactory nature, because of the transience, because of the change, because of the impermanence, inevitably it becomes unsatisfied, unsatisfactory, suffering. Now this complete behavior is out of our control. You can't completely control the behavior of these elements. You never know which element comes to the front, which one becomes predominant. You don't know. And so since it is uncontrollable, ungovernable, that again helps us to understand the non-self feature. So even though we consider this body belongs to me, when we consider very closely, we understand they are all elements, and you can't really control the element's behavior. Of course, you can take certain measures to behavior, change the behavior to some extent, but not complete. So they have their own nature to come and go. They have their own nature to arise and pass away. Now, if you are able to recognize that, more and more dispassion going to arise. Now you are not attached to the body. You are not attached to someone else's body. You are not attached to something else. Whole physical world appear like particles or kind of waves constantly arising and passing away. So this is a kind of a deep insight. If one is able to have, then the whole perspective going to be changed. Typically we have a kind of a perspective of individuals. This is my mother, this is my father, this is my husband, this is my wife, this is my children, this is my house, this is my car. Likewise, we have given so many names to all this physical world, and we become lost in that. But later, if we are able to look at the whole world in this perspective, then it doesn't appear attractive. It doesn't appear beautiful. It doesn't appear that important. Rather, everywhere what is available is elements. So what is there to hold? What is there to grasp? So you constantly will understand this transient nature, impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, and non-governability. Samudaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati, vaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati. Samudaya vaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati. So Buddha very beautifully mentions in this Dhatu Manasikara section as well that you may understand how they are coming and going. how they are rising and passing away. Actually, this understanding can come at any posture. There is no any particular posture that you need to maintain in order to conduct element meditation. But in any posture, you can practice elements meditation. Now, when one is doing like that, so more deeper understanding going to arise that there is nothing called me or mine or an individual so and so according to our given names, but kind of element characteristics, element behavior is only available. Attikayoti va panassa sati pachupattita hoti. Such kind of mindfulness is established. Yavadeva jnanamattaya patissati mattaya. Now more and more you are using this very body to further strengthen that understanding. This is a kind of an eye-opening insight, understanding, and now you are in a motive to enhance it, to strengthen that understanding. So you are using this same body to further enhance that understanding. And that is how you are living now. That is how you are spending the day to further penetrate the body, to further understand the body, to further understand the element's behavior, so that you are slowly able to remove that delusion. Now the individuality has now become sort of material, become simple elements, and fairly your mind become very clear. When we are holding, grasping so many perceptions, various signs, marks, so our mind become very heavy and it is filled, cluttered. But now when we are able to have a simplified perspective about the whole world, so it is not that heavy. Everywhere there is nothing but four elements. So likewise you can have a kind of a clear mind, lighter mind, because of this practice. And again it is more contributing towards wisdom. First of all, we had kind of a compactness view. This we consider this as one unit, one thing. But now it is either kind of a particles, millions of particles. More deeply, it is kind of waves, energies. So there is no compactness is possible there. It is nothing but elements. So you may lose the boundary. So when you are even paying attention to the posture, now you can't even perceive a boundary because everything appears like blurred. So as you continue this practice, so such experiences may be possible. And the whole body, whole outside appear like dots, appear like very transient, everything like bursting. So these types of insights, even very deep insights are possible. So more such kind of a dispassion, disenchantment, non-grasping nature of the mind arise, so that wisdom is growing and growing. And at one point it might helps to completely leave aside, completely let go of this whole grasping. So at that time, mind probably may not grasp anything in the world. Not only the body, not only the outside physical aspects, but also any other mental aspects mind might not grasp. If you are able to succeed like that, at that moment, mind is completely free. Completely free from any physical aspect, completely free from any mental aspect. You are free from rupakkhanda, that is the elements, material aggregate. Again, if you are able to free from vedanakkhanda, feelings, and the other thoughts, then the mind become completely free. It associates nothing. Anissitocha viharati. So Buddha says anissitocha viharati. That indicates that at that moment, mind is completely free, associating nothing. Nachakinchi loke upadhyati. It does not grasp anything in the world. So such kind of insight is possible. So as you move forward in enlightenment meditation, so as you are enhancing the or deepening your wisdom, so such complete freedom might be possible. It may happen momentarily. Even it is difficult to recognize. But again and again when you are practicing, so such insight may appear again and again, going to arise again and again. So you might be able to notice it. you might be able to notice that mind at one moment release from everything, not grasping anything, not associating anything. So this kind of experience become so strong, and now you are evident of it. Now you feel it like a jerk, you feel it like a kind of a different change of your domain. And if you are able to continue a practice, now you are able to enhance it to another moment. Now say 1 minute, after some time maybe another 2 minutes, after a couple of days say 10 minutes, after a couple of days maybe 15 minutes. So likewise, one is able to maintain that unbounded, unattached, non-grasping, unholding kind of a mind for a considerable period of time. Now, probably you may understand why you can't maintain such free mind forever. That is because still the mind is conditioned. That is because our mind is still subjected to various defilements. Now you have to find a path in order to completely uproot those defilements, uproot those various hindrances. So that path is nothing but Noble Eightfold Path. So you need to understand, okay, I got to maintain morality. There is a deep benefit you can gain through maintaining morality. And we need to have a clarity of mind in order to recognize various defilements. And in order to have various insights, we have to have a fairly clear mind, so that the concentration, samadhi, is also necessary. And on top of that, we need to further enhance wisdom so that we may not get deluded. So therefore, wisdom is the other aspect. So this sila, samadhi, panya becomes one of the key practice that we need to develop. So the whole Noble Eightfold Path become evident and become sort of necessary in order to continue to have, in order to have this freedom forever. So likewise, in this section also, in Dhatu Manasikara, we can understand that first of all, we need to establish mindfulness on elements. Next, we need to understand their behavior so that various insights are possible. And then one has to live a path, a way of life, so that you can completely free yourself and completely uproot all the defilements so that mind is utterly free. So such three stages also can be derived from this Satipatthana section. So with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching. Now I open the session for questions.
I currently do not have any questions that's been submitted to me. So for any new friends, you may raise your hand to ask you questions directly, or you can send them to me via chat. So Bente, while we are waiting for questions, I was wondering, you mentioned about, you know, the three phases. So is it true that the last phase, the Noble Eightfold Path, basically in order to reach this permanent release or abandonment of this clinging, it is actually during our daily life that we need to continue this practice in order to reach, I guess, at least the first stage of enlightenment?
Yeah, we can say so, because as you know, at the beginning, the meditation appear like only limited to some extent. Say you have selected a particular time, you have a kind of a schedule, and according to that you meditate. But later, as you are growing, so such schedule is actually not needed, because your mindfulness practice now sort of pervaded throughout the day. Throughout the day you are trying to be mindful. You still may have formal sitting and formal walking, but most of the time you are now being mindful. And more you are growing, now you have a sort of aspect of watching the mind throughout the day also. So you are engaged with various other activities, but at the same time, you are watching the mind. So as you watch the mind, what you are recognizing is the in the way how mind reacts because of various defilements. Now you understand various defilements. So therefore, recognizing various defilements is not limited to sitting or walking, but we need to be able to recognize various defilements, as you said, during all the daily activities. And that actually happens with the practice. Though we start with walking, sitting and etc. with some basics, it takes us to this type of whole day observation. It is not that we stop all the activities and simply watch the mind. Rather, while engaged in various activities, we are able to watch the mind. How mind reacts. Say you are talking with someone. So how your mind reacts? Are you getting angry? Are you becoming nervous? Are you sort of resisting what he or she is telling? So likewise, you can watch the mind how it is reacting during this conversation. So likewise, so all the daily activities while you are engaged with, we can observe how mind is responding, reacting, so that we can recognize various defilements, of course.
Oh, well, so Bhante, it is not necessarily during a formal meditation that we reach a certain state of enlightenment.
Yes.
It's more so that's helping us to establish our mindfulness so that we can apply it in every moment of our regular life, and that's where wisdom truly arises. Is that correct?
Exactly. So that is how the whole practice become a way of life. It is not a kind of a limited scope, a limited couple of hour practice. Rather, from the very moment you wake up till you go to sleep, so you are maintaining kind of a mindfulness. You are aware of what is really happening. Not only you about yourself, you can even understand how others are reacting, others are performing, because you have such awareness. And now you are deeply aware about yourself, about your own mind, how your own mind is reacting, what are the defilements arising, what are the shortcomings. And similarly, you can apply such knowledge inferentially to someone else as well. So basically, understanding defilements is one of the very important aspects in Satipatthana practice.
Wow, okay, thank you, Bunting. So one of the questions that I received is, elements are simply a collection of energies as they may manifest as vibrations. So we cannot consider them as a verb or a noun. I cry.
Yeah, sure. I just want to explain it because verbs, nouns and all these things are we have made, man-made constructs. Languages, everything is man-made. And we are using these names even to name elements. So we are using various labels in order to communicate about these elements. But in real, they are energies, as you said. There is no possibility of giving names or nouns or any of these. But just for our communication, easy understanding, so we have given various names, labels. Unfortunately, we get lost on these labels. We even struggle or quarrel based on these labels. But if we are able to go to the bottom, to the very basic fundamental level, so we can't use labels. You can't, so labels are not applicable. So that is what I also want to emphasize. So that's why, typically when we say a noun, now I am referring Jennifer. So Jennifer is a noun. And we get a perception of permanency because of a noun. So more and more the language has various nouns. And nouns are more prone to permanent notion. But actually it is impermanent. And if we say the Jennifer is a verb, would you like to accept it, Jennifer? Is Jennifer a noun or a verb?
I guess either one.
Is Jennifer a noun or a verb? Now we have to change the English, English grammar. Now typically we give a name in order to distinctly recognize, and we consider it's a kind of a permanent thing. From the beginning to the end, you are Jennifer. It gives us a wrong notion of permanency. But at least if we say it's a sort of a verb, then we are having some sort of an impermanent perception that is a kind of a changing thing. It's a kind of an activity. So that's why I just want to say, so all these are not really nouns, but rather verbs. But as you said correctly, those are not even, we can't put those typical language constructs. Rather, they are energies. True.
Okay. The follow-up question, the explanation to this concept of energy is excellent. Much merit to Swamin Wahansi. Sorry, is that a Sinhala word?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I wonder how this energy concept allows to interaction and emotion.
Sorry, could you repeat the last statement?
I feel like I'm maybe missing a verb. It says, I wonder how this energy concept allows to interaction and emotions. Maybe it allows to understand interactions and emotions.
I wonder how this energy concept allows to interactions and emotions. So basically, I mean, when we understand everything as sort of energies or say elements, so it is less prone to emotions, because emotions arise when we have individuality. So when suppose you are meeting with a loved one, so you immediately feel love. Suppose you are losing someone, immediately you feel sorrow, because you are having sort of individuality. So this is so and so. There are various labels. So we have so many other, say, past memories. So likewise, so it is quite, when we are in the conceptual world, all these emotions are likely to arise. But more we understand realistically, this is nothing but elements. So how elements can become permanent? How elements can give you permanent satisfaction? How elements can give you sort of controllability? Now here in your body also elements, the other body also elements. Can you say that your body, these elements, got to behave in a particular manner? You can't command. So, on such situation, you will understand how vulnerable they are, how transient, impermanent they are, non-governable they are, so that you may loosen sort of a reaction. You may loosen the possibility of getting too much emotional, because you understand it is not really that you or someone else is doing, but it's the nature. They have the nature to change. They have the nature to arise and pass away. You can't stop it. You simply have no control at all. They have their own causes and conditions. Accordingly, they are subjected to change. So this is the reality. So more and more you look at it like that, so you may less become sorrowful. You may less cry. You may less lament. Because you understand this is the nature. You can't stop it. So therefore, I feel that more understanding arises, so that actually helps to reduce sorrow and lamentation. Soka pariddhavanam samatikkamaya. So we are sorrowing and lamenting because we expect some sort of a permanency. We expect some sort of a control. I want this to happen in this way. I want this body to behave in this way. So likewise, we are trying to impose certain criteria. We like to impose certain behavior. But we don't have such control, because elements don't listen to us. Now we think that we have a kind of an agreement with these elements. This earth element should behave the way I like. This water element should behave the way I like. Yeah, element should behave the way I like. Can you have such agreement? Impossible. So more you go to the deep levels, you will understand. So they have their own governing laws, which are beyond my control.
So it is be just because of our ignorance, we are expecting them to behave the way I want. But really, they have their own laws of behavior, and they are simply subjected to those laws, which are beyond our control, so that we can become less emotional in a way. We can become really wise, and we can really patient, and we can endure what is going to happen.
Thank you, Bhante. So the person had a follow-up, I guess, few statements. Isn't it an interaction of energies? Emotions are an interaction of energies. Then a new energy arises in the minds of emotionally involved.
Yeah, we can say so, but the term emotion usually come to the say mental aspect, and you are taking some sort of an incident to some higher level. At the very early stage, it is not kind of an emotion, it is kind of a say small reaction we sense it. So we say you are meeting someone. So immediately you feel some sort of a resentment, resistance. So if you start to grow on top of that, then you become really angry. But this whole thing is based on, in a way, kind of an ignorance, because you immediately apply or attribute kind of a personality into the picture. So I am looking so and so. I am looking him. He's a bad person. He's my enemy. So likewise, we are attributing certain individuality into the picture. But suppose you are looking at this whole thing as elements. So your eyes are weaving a form. It is nothing but elements. Your ears are hearing some sound. It is nothing but elements. And what is physically available is also elements. If you have such kind of a energy perspective, elements perspective, can you be angry with elements? Can you be angry with energies? Impossible. So actually, on top of these fundamentals, we have developed so many concepts. So there we become emotional. There we become angry. There we become sort of lustful, based on this ignorance.
Thank you, Bhante. I'd like to invite Chita Devi to please ask your question.
Thank you. Now, Bhante, you described the characteristics of the four elements, and we brought it down to particles and energies and boundless and no identity of the person, but all of that we only can experience in meditation, not in daily life. Would you say that is correct?
Actually, we have to say that the yogi, the practitioner, has two modes: the conventional mode and this element mode. So, because otherwise you can't live the typical ordinary life. Because if you everywhere, if you are trying to go and apply this principle, then it is difficult to live. Say you are going to a supermarket and you have to name the parts. You have to see the menu, and you have to give to the cashier the notes and coins and everything. So there we have to accept that there's a value in these conventions. We have to live that conventional world. But knowingly, it is a convention. Knowingly, this we are using in order to facilitate the typical way of living. But in reality, they are sort of conventions. They are labels. They are not real. So if we are able to have that kind of an attitude, then we may not take them so seriously. That's the point. So this kind of practice helps us to really touch that reality, really touch that deep understanding, so that we are confident what is available is nothing but elements. And this sort of concepts are actually we are imposing on top of these fundamentals, and that also has a meaning, or that also has a benefit. So you can use that benefit, get that benefit, no harm. But in reality, it is kind of an illusion.
Yes, Manjay, but the actual feeling that this body is just energy is an experience which you only experience during meditation. That's correct.
Actually, there are people who have very good, say, clear comprehension and concentration. Sometimes they even say, Bante, it is not only during meditation, even when I am walking, I feel these vibrations. And even when I am eating, I feel these vibrations. Even when I am sleeping or lying down, I feel these vibrations. When I am even talking with someone, I feel that body is constantly vibrating. So likewise, this is not that impossible, it may be possible. And again, it depends on the person. It is not that everybody has to have such kind of a very sensitive kind of a character. But actually, in actual terms, they are available to all of us. But we are not attuned to that every day, at every time. But certain people have that blessing, or we can't say whatever the skill, even to attune to it, even while they engage with various other activities. So, I mean, you understand this body constantly has to work, no? Constantly has to digest, constantly has to breathe, constantly the heart vibration has to happen. So these elements are constantly functioning. But we are ignorant about that because we are lost in the conventional world, and we consider those are quite important. Those are like very attractive. But the body is constantly working on the element level.
Yes, that is correct. Because after, when I go for a long retreat and come back, I find all these, the everything's very sensitive, as you mentioned. You can suddenly, all these vibrations you feel even when you are in daily life. But of course, once you get into the routine, then we don't actually experience, at least I don't experience all that all the time, because yeah, very much into the conventional world then.
Yeah.
But you're right, Bhante. You can feel these things when the whole system is attuned.
Exactly.
And in my case, if I go to a long retreat and come back, I do feel these things, but it's transient.
Exactly, yes.
Mm-hmm. And just one quick thing, you spoke about emotions, but even at a higher level, I believe people do feel, I mean, if they lose their parents, for instance.
Yes.
No, it is a very, there is great sorrow. I mean, you can work it out because of the understanding of the Dhamma, but still one does experience sorrow in a different way. Maybe not the conventional way.
Actually, it depends, I feel, depending on the spiritual maturity of a person. Because if he is completely developed and is able to completely uproot certain levels of defilements, then it is impossible to become sorrowful. Say, for example, I'll just give you an example. There was one lady called Bandula Mallika during the Buddha's time. So she is the wife of one major called Bandula. So Bandula is the major of King Kosala in today's terms. I don't know the Senapati, you know?
Yes, Bandula. Yeah. Yes.
So, and one occasion, and she also has 16 sons. They are also working to the king's army. And somehow, king has killed her husband, Bandula, as well as 16 children. And the news come to her while she was offering dana to monks. But she was not shocked. She was not lamenting. She was not crying. Because she was able to attain anagami. She is one of the beautiful example of a lay woman who has attained anagami. And this non-returner level is free from sorrow and lamentation. Because you are free from that sensual lust is no more with that person. Kamaraga, patiga, completely uprooted when one becomes a non-returner. So therefore, when parents pass away, whether one cries or not, it depends on the person's level of understanding. And I am
spiritual understanding.
Exactly. So, I mean, I am not meaning here that certain people, certain children are completely ignorant and not grateful to their parents, that because of that they are not crying. I mean, it's a, that's a different story. But rather, even a very good person, if he is extremely spiritually developed, probably he may consider this, I mean, everything is subject to arising and passing away. I have no control. My parents, they too are have the nature to die. So there is no point of crying and there is no benefit of crying even for me or to them.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Vantesh. Yeah. That's really difficult, but of course, if you are very much deep, in very deep spiritual level, then it's different.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Vantesh. Thank you. I'd like to invite Kumudini to ask the next question.
Vantesh, I do agree with Dharma Sarnai, Vantesh. I do agree that you do feel these sensations. Sometimes I feel them a lot when I'm listening to Dhamma talks and things like that.
Yeah.
But my question originally was about Satipatthana being developed gradually, you know, as you, day to day sort of thing. But if you go the other method, I have been listening to something. That's why I'm trying to get the comparison from you, that if you go the other method by gaining jhana, I'm just been reading, that is why.
Right.
If you go the other method, achieve jhana, and then when you come out of it, you contemplate what happened and the stages, that's completely a different method, isn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't quite understand that. So that's why I'm asking you about this.
Yes.
Can you compare the two and let me know?
Yeah. So, as you said, the jhanic practice, so first of all, one is attaining jhana. So, you are become absorbed to some sort of a mental aspect. Suppose you are able to have the anapanasati nimitta, kind of a sign, kind of a light, and you get absorbed to it. And you spend there, say, a couple of minutes or several times, long time. Now, you emerge from it. And now, after the emerging, you should be able to recognize either what are the jhana factors, how your mind being again and again applied to the primary object, and how you are observing that primary object, how you are feeling that primary object. the sign, and what are the perceptions, and how the piti, rupture coming and going. So likewise, this whole experience has to be looked at objectively in a vipassana point of view after you emerge from jhana.
Oh, I see.
Previously, you were absorbed to it. You have become one with it. But now you step back and look at the same thing in objective manner. So it is in a way little subtle in a way. Because you need to, mostly it is the mental aspects you are watching.
But you have to emerge from the jhana in
definitely
order to contemplate
definitely
what occurred
definitely
previously, right?
Yes, definitely. Because while being in the jhana, you can't practice vipassana.
This person that I was listening to says that is the only way you can reach enlightenment, and I was very confused. So, because I prefer the Satipatthana method, I was just trying to make, you know, read and understand different views.
Yeah.
So that is what.
Yes, I mean, actually, telling that jhana is a must to attain enlightenment is kind of a partial or not completely correct. I mean, either one can have jhana or not, one can attain enlightenment. That is one, I mean, say, it is not my statement, I mean, this is a kind of a common statement by many, popular teachers, say, Mahasisado, Prasado, Pandita, as I said, Ajahn Sumedho, Ajahn Chah, even last time we mentioned about this point. So basically,
yes, exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
Yes.
And also, Bhante, about rebirth was also talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And they spoke, I was always under the impression that a rebirth takes place like a leech would. When the holding is released, as soon as it is released, another one is taken up.
Right.
But they talked about a Gandhava or something like that.
Yes, yes. So that is not accepted in the Theravada tradition. Kind of an intermediate life is not accepted in Theravada tradition, but rather we can say it's a kind of an intermediate atma.
So consciousness exists without anything?
No, that is why. I mean, those are in a way kind of confusions taken from Mahayana. And some Mahayana traditions believe of such Gandhava state, kind of an intermediate stage. And we can say, I mean, even if it is an intermediate stage, it's another type of life. It may be a short time, short life, but still it's another type of life.
Okay. Like a ghost?
Something, maybe. Maybe. But I mean, it now, basically, now say, someone removes or someone passes away in this life. Now, accordingly, there is some karma, there is continuous, now there is karma potential available, and accordingly, there is a sort of a grasping has happened. Now, immediately, he may get reborn at another level. So that is immediate.
Yes.
That is immediate. There is no kind of a gap. There is no gap. If they consider Gandhava, that is also another type of life. But there is no gap. After passing away, he became a ghost. Hungry ghost, maybe. Hungry ghost may be possible. Because, you know, the Petaloka is something that Buddha says is available. And if one is with less merit, probably one may be reborn as a peta, as a hungry ghost.
That's another type of life. Pardon me, Bhante.
I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
What they talked about was like the proper rebirth according to the person's karma. There was no place for him to go to. So he was in a Gandhava state until such a place was found for him.
Mm-hmm.
So that is how they talked about.
Yes. So that is the interpretation typically given to this Gandhava state. But the Theravada basically reject it. Theravada does not accept that Gandhava state.
Actually, it doesn't matter too much for our
yes,
low business.
Exactly.
I'm wondering whether I should read anything like this or listen to others.
No, I prefer you to maybe listen practice-oriented things rather than too much onto the conceptual things, because those readings and those sermons actually confuse us, take us into more doubts, rather than clearing the path in the practical aspect. So they give a lot of theories, confusions, and you know, dogmatics things, and then it's very difficult to understand the Buddha's teaching, because Buddha's teaching is very practical and it helps us to understand ourselves, why we suffer.
They quoted two sutras from the Majjhima Nikaya and some places also regarding the Gandhava, but I'm not going to read it. Thank you, Bhante. I think I will stop doing these readings or listening to it also.
Okay.
I just want to listen to stuff so that I can enhance my knowledge, but maybe too much is too much.
Yes.
Thank you.
So the next question is, I can maintain mindfulness in walking and sitting meditation and even while I am exercising, but it is quite difficult in other day-to-day activities when there is no repetition. When I tried to keep body awareness and started watching mind at the same time, it works better. Is this a correct approach?
Yeah, no problem. Because if you are able to observe mind, no harm. Because that is how it is growing. Beginning, we may start with the body, but it paves the way to observe various feelings. As you grow, it paves the way to observe the mind. So it is true, if you are able to watch the mind, no harm, you can continue.
So I'd like to invite Sonali to unmute yourself and ask the next question, please. Sonali Notech.
Hello, hello, thank you, sorry.
Yeah.
You might have answered this question already, but I just have a quick question for you. I have been practicing for a while, and I when thoughts come during the day, during daily activities, throughout the day, it seems as though I can kind of catch them as they arise, but on the other hand, I may not have be able to, I don't know, but it seems as though when I catch them, it's in the early stages of development. And typically I don't act on those, but I can see them coming. And the most frequently occurring emotion is jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it coming, and as soon as it comes, I kind of think, why is this coming again? And oh, it's coming, and I kind of make a joke of it, or, you know.
Right.
But it seems as though it just comes up just a little bit, just to show its face,
right.
And then it disappears.
Right, right.
And I'm just wondering if you have any, this has been happening for a long time,
mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if you have any strategies that I can use.
Yeah, actually you are applying the correct strategy. Basically, if we are able to recognize jealousy as jealousy, then we are not a victim of jealousy. Rather, we can laugh to it, and simply then it will, as you said, simply show its face and then it disappears. So this is how we are, in a way, weakening the defilement. So Buddha says, Janato bhikkave pasato asavanam khayam vadami. When only we see and know a defilement, then only we can able to uproot it slowly it may go away. Now this is how we are removing that habit. So all these are, in a way, kind of deeply rooted habits, but as due to some reason now they have come to the surface. But properly we understood it, we haven't become a victim of that habit now. But we understood this is jealousy, we understand this is anger, we understand this as lust. So likewise, once we know at that very moment, this is the type of defilement, same Buddha says, this is the proper practice, that you are knowing the defilement with your wisdom. Now you are not a victim, you are not getting deluded by that. As a result, it quickly disappears, and you are not promoting that defilement. You are not further strengthening that defilement, so that it becomes weaker and weaker. So you are applying the proper method, correct method. Slowly, slowly it may disappear. We can't say when, we can't say how quickly, but this is the only method possible.
Now sometimes when it happens during meditation, sometimes a thought
yes.
comes and then I can kind of look into it really hard and figure out something, I guess. I can just kind of, I feel like my whole body shakes as I go into it,
mm-hmm.
and I look at it, and mm-hmm. then I'm able to deal with it a little bit better. And when I come out of meditation, it's kind of gone.
Right.
But during daily life, it seems like it comes and goes, and I feel like if I could just go into it, if it was there for a little bit longer and I could go into it,
but
it
may not stay long, because when you are not promoting it, when you are not feeding it, it can't stay long, because we are the ones feeding defilements. When we stop feeding them, they will disappear automatically, quickly. Actually, we don't need to stay them longer. Rather we can simply we can observe them objectively, and we can understand how they are behaving. And we don't need to invite them to stay longer either. But if you like, to analyze it, how it is working and all these things, and under kind of a controlled environment, while being very mindful, you can sort of observe it in many different ways in order to understand it fully. But when we are stopping feeding, it may quickly disappear.
Okay. So did you say that if it appears during my meditation, I should just observe it and then not pay too much attention to it?
I mean, observing it is a kind of a paying attention, but
okay.
Not deluded, by the way. So you when say, for example, when this jealousy comes, suppose like this, there was no jealousy, your mind was free from jealousy. Now there is jealousy arising. Now you understand the arising aspect of the jealousy, but you are not feeding it, so it is coming by on its own due to various other reasons. Now it is on the surface. You understand, okay, this is jealousy. You are not deluded by it and you are not distracted by it. Rather, you are face to face with it. You very well understand this is jealousy. And since you are not feeding it, since you are not deluded by it, now it will slowly disappear because they have the nature to go away. They are not permanent things. All these defilements have the nature to come and go. And if we feed, then they will stay longer. Now, when they are arising, if you know it, when they are present, if you know it, and you stop feeding them, they will simply go. So likewise, we are weakening the defilement. So allow them to come. Basically, allow them to come, and you, without getting disturbed, you are equanimously watching it, objectively watching it, and as a result, by nature, it has the nature to go away, pass away. You don't need to struggle with it. You simply have the established mindfulness. You are in a fairly wise approach and you are watching it. And as a result, it will automatically will go away.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Bhante, do we have more time to keep going?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to invite Joseph Siddiqui to please ask the next question.
Thank you. Terwan Saranai Bhante.
Terwan Saranai.
I want to ask a question about my practice. You were talking about how we can reach a stage where the mind is free and there's a kind of a feeling there's an unburdened mind. And in my own practice, now when I sit in the sitting posture, almost immediately I go to a sort of an empty space where I don't feel the sensation of the breath. And at first I kind of felt like I was going to choke, or there was a kind of a feeling of numbness. It was kind of a little dull. Dullness or kind of like a muffledness, but I understood that this was normal and sort of became more confident with the lack of a sensation of breath. And so now that space, that sort of empty space, I'm becoming a little more familiar with it.
Correct.
And sort of have more of a sense of a spaciousness. And then I find maybe after about five minutes or so, it's hard to tell, maybe less, all of a sudden my eyes open. And when my eyes open, I feel a sort of like a release of concentration. But the mindfulness is still there. I don't have any thoughts or anything running through my mind, although I can obviously see what's in front of me.
Right.
And it feels a little more kind of relaxing.
Correct.
And then I sort of make a conscious effort. I close my eyes again. And then within a few minutes, maybe I have an intermittent feeling of breath. But then the breath goes away, I feel relaxed, and I have the empty space in the mind. And this is a pretty new development, actually just today, honestly. And I was wondering what you would suggest, if this is there's a way to facilitate this, or how I should go about it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So basically, as you move forward, so this kind of an empty space, spaciousness, unattached state of mind is possible. And once it is happening, you got to just be. So don't doubt about it, don't be afraid of it, and don't get out of it. Rather, try to stay there for as long as possible for the time being. Because now only you are familiarizing with it. So this is in a way the natural nature of the mind. Or this is the typical normal state of the mind. And on top of that, we have so much of defilements, so much of thoughts coming and going. Now, temporarily, we are able to remove that defilements. We are temporarily able to remove that wrapper so that we are able to touch that depth. So in that depth, what is available is kind of a pure awareness, kind of a spaciousness, kind of an emptiness. It is not defiled. It's a very pure. But it appears like kind of boring because it has no activities. So our defilements have colored the mind, but now that color has completely removed so that it becomes completely pure. Completely, say we'll say it's white. Something like that. It is not really white. I'm just giving an example. So likewise, so it appears complete spaciousness, not attached with anything, not grasping anything, not holding anything, and free from any colors. And it is simple spaciousness. And simply be with that. And suppose you are able to be there for 5 minutes. Next time, try to be there for 10 minutes. Next time, try to be there for 15 minutes. Likewise, you have to become familiar with this state of mind, first of all. Actually, later we are using this to further recognize some subtle defilements. So first of all, we need to well establish on this spaciousness of the mind. So at the moment, your duty is to expand it and to support it, to let it grow, so that you are able to immediately go there. You are not taking long time to establish there, but you can immediately go there. Now, even suppose you are going to a walking session, you can immediately establish there. So likewise, you got to fairly familiarize with this state.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. Thank you very much.
Okay, welcome.
Okay, Bhante, I believe this is the last question. And then someone asked whether they could share their experience on the elements, Bhante.
I didn't get the answer. How they want to show their experience or what?
So there's one more question. And
right.
Then there's another person that mentioned about wanting to share their own experience on the elements. And I didn't know if we have time for that too, Bhante.
Maybe then we'll take it on the next time. So on next Wednesday, so we'll have kind of a discussion. And again, I like to remind you that there is an English retreat going on these days, conducted by Canberra Group. Probably you can post your question to that. And actually, I am on Sri Lankan time at 9 a.m. I got to participate in that question and answer session. So you actually can post your question to that as well. So it will last till 1st of January. It's a 5-day virtual retreat. And that is another possibility. Okay then.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Okay,
how
then.
How do we participate in it?
Jennifer, don't you have that information with you?
Yes, I can share it.
Okay, great.
In the chat.
So please pass that information to them so that if anyone likes, they can join.
Thank you,
Bhante. Yeah. 31 Sunline. Okay, then I think we have spent about 1.5 hours. So most of you have participated and shared your experience, and we were in a good dialogue. So, and again, we have listened to the Buddha's teaching. So with all these accumulated merits, we share with all the past away relatives, all beings, and we wish everybody to become healthy and be free from suffering. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මං පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තිය ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තිය ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තිය සාදු සාදු සාදු